There's a place where I've been told every street is paved with gold, and it's just across the border line.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Antonio Gonzalez, the president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, which, founded in 1974, is the largest and oldest nonpartisan Latino voting participation organization in the United States. During the first dozen years of Gonzalez's tenure at the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, he's doubled Latino registration from 5.5 million in 1994 to more than 10 million registrants in 2006. And increased Latino voting from nearly 5 million to over 11 million between 1994 and 2012. In 2005, Time magazine named Antonio Gonzalez one of the 25 most influential Hispanics in America. Welcome to Background Briefing, Antonio Gonzalez.
It's good to be with you, Ian. I wish I could get you to introduce me every time I talk on the radio.
Well, you know, we're kind of ships that pass in the night, because I follow you on the air on Mondays. So it's good to have a conversation with you, because we barely get a chance to say hello.
But ditto.
Yeah. So tell me, though, about this bill that's the so-called Gang of Eight, being, you know, praise is being heaped upon them. Even the president called from Africa. People are talking about this exercise in bipartisanship that drove an $8 billion bill up to $40 billion for additional border security that one of the bill's sponsors, Senator Corker, called overkill. So now, of course, the House is saying it's dead on arrival. So what are we celebrating here?
Well, we are not celebrating, Ian. There's a host of leadership across the country that is very unhappy with the Senate immigration reform bill, and for the right reasons, hopes that it doesn't get enacted. There's a lot of people in the country, mostly on the far right, for the wrong reasons, that hope an immigration bill is not enacted. But this bill is really a boondoggle for the military-industrial complex, militarizing the U.S.-Mexico border unnecessarily. The border, actually, according to statistics, is the safest place in the country, and Homeland Security has already classified the border as secure, with no net in-migration from Mexico, for example, for the last 4 years. So this is overkill, and I can go further about the immigration legalization fraud that is being perpetrated as well. It's basically a 30% legalization masquerading as a 11 million person legalization. It's quite a mess.
Well, I spoke recently with the mayor of Laredo, Texas, and across the border, Nuevo Laredo is one of the most dangerous towns or cities in Mexico. And they only had one murder last year. And he also said that El Paso is the safest city in America. So what's all this talk about the border being so unsafe and needing all this extra billions of dollars worth of security?
Well, it's a spin that's been perpetrated. You know, a lot of it has to do with just, frankly, lack of information or disinformation with the English-speaking public that, you know, see B-roll from 20 years ago and think that there's hordes of Latin American immigrants storming the southern border. Nothing could be further from the truth. On the one hand, you know, the backdrop of this immigration reform is, you know, sort of the slowly but surely demographic transformation of America, and the social composition of the average immigrant has transformed over the last two generations as well. They're no longer, although there are European immigrants, most immigrants are from the developing world. And that, you know, pulls at the consciousness of that sector of the country that still sees America as a European, hegemonic, ethno-racial country, and that's changing. And immigration is part of that change. It's a small part of that change, but it's a very obvious part of that change. So that's part of the context too. People resisting immigration reform because They want America to stay a white country, but they're two generations late.
So the there, of course, there's a lot of lobbying going on here, and the sausage making sort of indicates to me how politics really operate in this country, where the liberals basically keep giving things up in order to get some bipartisanship, and you end up with this monstrosity. I mean, the same thing happened when Obama first started with the stimulus because the economy was flat on its back because of the crash of Wall Street. Compromise, compromise, compromise. You end up with something that doesn't really do the job, and we're still you know, barely recovering. Otherwise, had we had a full-throated stimulus, we wouldn't have the problems we have today. The same with the health care bill. Compromise, compromise, compromise in order to get the bipartisanship. So all of this idea of bipartisanship, to me, all it is moving the goalposts to the right.
Yeah, I think we use the wrong word when we say it's a compromise. These are essentially, a better word would be surrender or concession, because there really isn't something that's being had on the liberal side. There's no, you can't really point to, in the 1,000 pages, there are perhaps two or three programs that progressives or just liberals, would say that's a good program, and 100 elements in there that are really quite punitive. It may be that we're playing just a cynical game here, Ian. That is, Democrats are positioning to blame Republicans and seek to use it in the election campaign. More 2016 than 2014. That may be the real kabuki theater that's unfolding here. Of course, it's like any plan. Once you get into battle, the plan goes to hell because reality intervenes. And the border surge is one example of that. What's really behind the border surge is the military-industrial complex making up for its lost profits due to the cutbacks in Afghanistan, Iraq, and the sequester. And the timing is almost, it's very precise. Sequester hits, and the lobby migrates to the immigration reform bill as the target of opportunity through Republicans. They begin to, you know, say how terrible it is on the border. Give me another $10 billion, then $20 billion, now $30 billion more. But I want to be clear, it's not just Republicans. I mean, who drives this is Chuck Schumer, the senator, and very ambitious senior senator from New York, who has transformed over the last 10 years since September 11th into a hawk. And now he's become an immigration hawk. So the border surge, that wasn't written by the Republicans. The border surge was written by Chuck Schumer.
Right, and he's the guy, by the way, that protects the hedge fund managers and the Wall Street billionaires by keeping the carried interest rate at 15%. So those guys pay less tax than their secretaries do. And he's now saying that by the end of the year, the House will pass a Senate bill. Trey Gowdy, the Republican from South Carolina in the House Judiciary Committee, says the Senate bill is not going to pass in the House. It's going to pass. It's not going to pass for a myriad of reasons, and that the House will pass its own bill in pieces, which will be tougher on enforcement and border security than the Senate bill, which is it hardly possible. Nancy Pelosi is saying immigration reform is necessary for Republicans if they ever want to win. Why is she telling them what to do here? I mean, isn't that what you're saying here, that they're on a course of political suicide? So, and that's what the subtext is.
You know, I don't believe in any of that. Uh-huh. I got to tell you, if you're looking at the 2014 cycle, Republicans are not in a bad place. Their districts do not have, there's not a way in their districts to have a strong immigration lobby today, because redistricting made them very conservative, safe districts. So their bases are telling them to fight. And so resisting immigration reform for the House of Representatives is not a problem for 2014. Regarding 2016, anybody that claims to know what's going to have, I mean, you know, they should go play the lottery, because they're pretty smart and lucky. I don't claim to know what's going to happen in 2016. At this time in the 2008 cycle, which would be 2005, no one even had heard of Barack Obama right? I mean, people thought Hillary was a lock. That's what it was. Obama was beginning to emerge. No one thought that he had a chance against Hillary. So I really don't know what's going to happen in 2016. I didn't expect George Bush to take Al Gore in 2000. Mm-hmm. If we're in 1997 trying to prognosticate. So I think part of the big problem here is the architecture of this bill. Omnibus bills are the single hardest thing to get done in the American Congress in the postmodern period. And you just wonder if, for twisted reasons, the Republicans don't have a point about going incrementally. It's just easier to get done. Of course, they want to pass evil increments, and what you want to do is pass positive and effective increments. But I just think sometimes that this stubborn resistance or stubborn fealty to an omnibus comprehensive immigration reform architecture in practice has been proven to be a failure. And I agree with the House Republicans. I don't think the Senate bill has a chance in hell. I think we're looking at, everyone's going to fight, and then this thing will die in conference at the end of the year. And I hope that somebody, I know we're certainly trying to figure out how to pick up the pieces and get at least something done before we get into the 2014 cycle. If not, then we're looking at a 2015 fight again.
But, of course, the gerrymandering in the House doesn't apply to the Senate races. They have to run on a statewide basis. So, presumably, that issue of alienating the largest growing demographic group in the country. I mean, I think that's why Adam Liptak in the New York Times did a long piece on Chief Justice Roberts, suggesting in a way that he is the greatest strategist the Republicans have. You know, his getting rid of the Voting Rights Act will allow them in the next cycle to steal as many minority votes as they can possibly do. But at the same time, liberalizing on same-sex marriage is helping the Republicans enter the 21st century. And the arguments you hear about Latino voters embracing the Latino vote is not that we love Latinos, it's that we better stop pissing them off.
Well, again, one has to look at the difference between an off-year election and a presidential election. I would expect, and this holds true for the Senate, if you look at the Senate in 2014, those Democrats, there's about four of them that were up for, that will be up for a re-election in 2014, did not support or only supported the Senate bill after the border surge got on. They were no votes, and they came back because of the border surge. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, the country is divided. I think we have to acknowledge that it's divided. And when you have low turnout like you have in off-year races, the right-wing share, the conservative share, grows, and that's why they're able to continue to win. And I would expect in 2014 that the Republicans will do very well in both the House and the Senate. 2016, when you have big turnouts of people of color and young people, that's when Democrats tend to gain. Now, and I don't think this logic will change. I think it has to change, but that would mean a fundamental reform of American political process, longer conversation.
Sure.
It won't change in 14 or 16. Hence, you know, we have a better shot in pressuring for immigration reform in 15 as the presidential's approach. This is when the Hispanic vote is dangerous. And in 17, if you have a Democratic victory.
Well, just in the last minute or so, Antonio Gonzalez, why has the United States taken this peculiar and punitive path? You know, now they're ladling it with pork barrel. You know, the European Union basically has open borders, and it would seem to me that if we had an open border with Mexico and with Canada, which we largely have at any rate, you would have a situation where people could come back and forth from their home countries, and if you had legal means of having visas get back and forth, that would solve the problem better than a fence, which all that does is is criminalize the border. People pay thousands of dollars to coyotes. That seems inhuman as well as criminal. I just don't understand why we have taken this approach and not had a more enlightened approach of a more open border as opposed to a closed one.
Well, the European analogy is instructive, I think. Europe got to that point of open borders only after, you know, centuries of conflict. And the United States is still in that phase of conflict with the developing Latin American countries to the south. And you add the racial backdrop, and I think that's really the understanding. We're an immature culture and country in that regard. I think we'll get there as Latin America continues to develop and as the, you know, sort of Europe versus old Europe versus the developed versus the colonies ethos, you know, works its way out of American culture through time. But in the meantime, and you're correct, it would be better to have a North American visa system, for example. Dr. Hinojosa from UCLA has explored that concept, have the market decide, labor go back and forth, wages will equalize, and so forth.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid we're out of time, Antonio.
We could go on and on.
I thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Antonio Gonzalez, who's president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, which was founded in 1974. During his tenure, he doubled Latino registration from 5.4 million in 1994 to more than 10 million and increased Latino voting by nearly 5 million to over 11 million from 1994 to 2012. And Time magazine named him in 2005 one of the 25 most influential Hispanics in America. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.